Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. It's very nice to have you with us for the next 29 minutes. Now, on the program in the past, we've discussed the difference between a state broadcaster and a public broadcaster. Just to remind you again, a state broadcaster is basically, well, the voice of who's ever in power in that country. A public broadcaster would be, let's say, like the BBC or the CBC in Canada, are basically publicly funded, not government funded, but funded by the public through tax dollars, and are kept at arm's length with the government. Now, Tonga's prime minister says he wants to close down the country's public broadcaster for not being supportive of his government. The Tonga Broadcasting Commission would either close down or be sold off under legislation, and the prime minister says he intends to introduce that. He has been very public about this and has had difficulty with TBC, that's the Tonga Broadcasting Commission, and its journalists in the past, calling for reporter Viola Ulakai to be sacked for asking too tough a questions to him at a press conference. Bruce Hill speaks next to the Tongan publisher, Kalefi Mula, who says the prime minister appears to have decided to do something about his concerns, but he may not have much support from the rest of his cabinet.
Well, he has expressed publicly his dissatisfaction with the Tonga Broadcasting Commission, and he actually is thinking about introducing a legislation that will do away with the Tonga Broadcasting. Essentially, what he's dissatisfied with is the fact he believes that the Tonga Broadcasting Commission is not supportive of his government. He accused one of its reporters one time for asking too many hard questions. He has accused them of the fact that they are not supportive or give positive reports to some of the things he has done. And so there has always been this tension between him and the Tonga Broadcasting Commission. But now he has come out publicly declaring that he wants it either sold or do away with it. And the Tonga Broadcasting Commission is basically in trouble in terms of the way he thinks.
But isn't asking hard questions pretty much the job of journalists at places like the TBC?
It definitely is a job of journalists, but you see, the problem with the Prime Minister is that in his thinking, media or whoever is in power, the media should bend to it. They shouldn't be questioning or challenging his authority. I think he was used to, when he was in opposition, there has been generally support from the media in terms of carrying his message and writing news reports about what he was doing. But now when he is in government and he's being questioned and challenged on decisions and on policies, practices, he does not like that.
Is the Prime Minister actually serious about abolishing the TBC, or is he just venting his spleen in public?
No, I think he's quite serious about it, but I don't think he's going to be able to get cabinet approval, and definitely he's going to get a public uproar about it.
What was it about what the TBC has been doing that so upset him? I know that he was very upset with journalist Viola Ulakai, who was asking tough questions at press conferences, and I think at one stage he was even trying to remove the general manager, Nenise Fifita.
Right. Well, there are many, many issues that came up when his government came into being. One of those issues, of course, was he wanted to bring reform into education in Tonga. And the way he brought out those reforms, he brought in, for example, an IT person to be his chief advisor. He wanted to completely overhaul the educational system. The problem was that when he was asked what he was doing, why he was doing what he was doing, he couldn't explain it. And then he took then an adversarial stance in thinking that the media, or especially Tonga Broadcasting, was against him. And therefore he was wanting, in the case of Viola, to be dismissed. And not only that, there were issues concerning the boards that he wanted to bring reform. All of those things was he he had a difficulty in trying to explain it to the media, and the media was just doing their job in asking questions and wanting him to explain. And I guess that's why he was quite angry and quite opposed to what he called hard questions.
But I remember interviewing the Akalisi Pohiva of the 1990s, many years ago, who was a firebrand radical and was speaking out in favour of freedom of the media. How could that Akalisi Pohiva turn around many years later in 2017 and saying he wants the Tonga Broadcasting Commission abolished because its journalists are asking hard questions? That's what he used to be in favour of.
Well, you give him power, and that's what he did. That's exactly what happens. You have a person who was in the opposition, but you give them power, they became the government, and immediately they behave in a completely different way from the way they used to be. Somehow, at least in Tonga, power means that you have the right only for your message. Nobody else have the right to ask questions, and that is one of the sad things about this government.
The National University of Samoa is expanding its media and journalism course to a bachelor's degree in 2018. The journalism course started as a certificate program and then was upgraded to a diploma, and next year it will be a full degree program. Samoa's Journalists Association, or JAWS, that's J-A-W-S, yes, JAWS, says the move is in recognition of the important role the media now plays in everyday life in Samoa. Its president, Upulu Lance Polu, spoke to Moira Taylor about the move.
It has to happen because we need to lift the entry point so that the quality of the students that we get after the training, the quality students that we require to deliver in service of the industry and ultimately the Samoan public.
I guess, too, the way we tell stories has also changed with social media and other aspects as well. So that also will be quite good training ground about how things have changed, obviously, over the years.
Yeah, well, certainly we, Samoan as a Polynesian and perhaps any other traditional society with a very firm and a very strong oral tradition, telling stories and communicating through the word of mouth and passed through generations. So it's that skill and that knowledge and the art that needs to be, to have modern ways of delivering and telling those stories through pictures and sound and the word itself. So perhaps that's what we're looking at here. And of course, you may know that Samoa over the last 10, 15 years, the explosion of the media has been so that we have the major players in society, like the churches, who now run their own television and radio stations and newspapers and online stuff, so other than the privately owned media. So there is that need for the properly trained personnel to deliver that, and perhaps marrying that traditional knowledge of telling stories and the oral traditions that within us, and then using the new technology through the cameras, the sound bites, the images that we use, and the other very significant skills like animation and that stuff, telling the stories in a different way and in a more interesting way, so that that will continue on into the future. So yeah, they are exciting times, and I hope that the course will deliver that.
Have you seen the numbers increase in terms of young people interested in looking at media as a future career?
You and I know that the parents will always be pushing for their child to be doing law or doing accountancy or economics or that kind of stuff. And the media is usually the last that they will take. But so that's perhaps one of the reasons why they elevating the entry point so that it will make it more appealing to the parents. And with the way that the media is really in a high profile in a country, I think that will also help. But yes, it's all that. It's lifting the entry point and, of course, looking at where we can actually deliver and teach and produce students who can actually help out and do the work in a very professional way and in the standard that is really, really high for Samoa.
And you're listening, of course, to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Charlie 105, it is PDF 222 journal.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Over the last 5 years, streaming services are coming online all the time to just stream all kinds of content. I mean, even here at PCJ Radio International, I was telling you last week on the program about how now we're starting to stream some classic Happy Station shows and Radio Netherlands content through our Patreon page. If you people who become patrons with a very small fee can download all these programs. That's patreon.com/PCJ Radio. Of course, there's also free content there. But let's talk about the number of new players, because there's new players coming online, not just for audio, but also for streaming television. I suppose there's many of you out there right now who have something like Netflix or Amazon Prime. Now, most are being developed by consortiums of media players and telecommunications groups. Some will fail, but yet some will succeed. Now, how do we try to sort out who is who and what is what? Nick Christensen is the deputy editor of Mumbrella. He speaks next to Richard Ady.
Look, Stan's a really interesting play, and it's going to shake up the market in a number of ways. So it's a joint venture between Nine Entertainment and Fairfax, and they're putting together $100 million in basically streaming video on demand. And so you're going to be able to get a number of different things. You're going to be able to get movies, and you're going to be able to get a lot of, you know, different TV shows. The hero products here are really Breaking Bad, which is a series that's been around for a little while, and Better Call Saul, which is the new Breaking Bad, and it's a prequel to that show. And it's going to be one of those ones that traditionally, you know, you would have seen probably appear on Foxtel first, and then anyone who's not a pay TV subscriber would have had to wait for it. Now you're going to be able to access this for $10 a month subscription. You can watch it online. If you've got an internet-enabled TV, you'll be able to watch it on your TV. And it's part of this shake-up of the competitive landscape, where you've got Foxtel now entering the space as well, because they've seen Stan enter the market.
Yeah, they've got Presto, which Presto was launched before, of course.
It's been around since late last year, but really it's only kicked into gear in the last 2 weeks. And again, it's around that $10 price tag, actually $15 to get both movies and TV. And all of this is being driven in anticipation of Netflix.
Netflix, as you mentioned, launches officially in March. Of course, 200,000 Australians, or perhaps more than that, accessing Netflix in the United States using a VPN and essentially pretending that they live in America. How's it going to be different when they launch here?
Well, this is going to be one of the interesting things. The simple answer is we don't know exactly, but we have seen Foxtel come out and say quite clearly, we own the rights, and the Australian Netflix will actually be an inferior product. So it'll be interesting to see if Australian consumers actually sign up to that, or whether they just keep using their VPNs and keep their American accounts and actually go around this. It might actually drive that, you know, illegal downloading, use that in inverted commas, subscriptions, because people will actually possibly resent Foxtel restricting the rights to content when they want to see a competitive market. Now, Foxtel is well within its rights to do that. It has paid for that content, but it will create an interesting predicament.
All right. So, Nick, you think these services, which actually don't require a customer to have a binding contract you can choose on a month-by-month basis, are actually part of something much bigger.
I think you'll find that actually the SVOD war is a broader play and a proxy for what we're saying is a battle between the telcos. So, you know, there's been a lot of attention on streaming and how great it's going to be for consumers. And what's really interesting is how the telcos are using that as a value proposition to sell their broader offering, the bundle.
It's the bundle. So what we're talking about, Telstra on one side and everybody else on the other?
I think so. I think you're going to see a situation where you've got the alliance of Telstra, who obviously own a 50% ownership of Foxtel. And then you've got, you know, the likes of Optus and iiNet and Dodo going, hang on, we don't have that. We've got to have a compelling offer to drive our bundle. And when we're talking bundles, we're talking phone, internet, all of that, and some sort of pay TV offering, usually around the $100 price tag. Now, Foxtel's made it clear that it's going to have its triple play, which is all around one price for all of these services.
Yeah.
And so the likes of everyone else are going to have that. Now, in the case of them, they don't have Foxtel, but they do have Fetch TV, which is an IPTV service. It's been around for a couple of years,
yep,
and it has struggled because it hasn't had a great content offering. Now, what Fetch TV has made very, very clear is that it's very open to Netflix. Happy to have you in there. It's got all of the catch-up services, ABC iView, 7+, all of that's in there. It's really open to it, whereas Foxtel won't have a bar of Netflix. It's already said you will not be able to get these services within their platforms. In the case of the telcos, there's going to be this real telco war over not the 30 cents profit that streaming has, but over the $35 per consumer that you can make in the telco space.
So if I choose to take up Stan, for example, at the moment it's free for a month, but I say I like it, I keep paying for it, $10 a month.
Once you break that down and you go, okay, you know, it costs X dollars to buy all the content rights, it costs X dollars to set up all the streaming because, you know, uploading and sending this content to consumers costs money.
Mm.
You've got to staff it, you've got to market it, all of that. The profit, most industry insiders say somewhere, probably for a Netflix, it's probably somewhere between $1.50. For the Australian players, it could be as low as 30 cents. You times that by X million people, you will make money from this, but it's not really the big game.
So hang on, 30 cents profit for just for Stan or something like that, but because it's a bundle, and I guess they make most of that on the fixed line, they can make more money.
What you'll find is that streaming will be that hero proposition that actually drags people in and actually encourages them to sign up to, you know, I really want Netflix, I really want Stan. It's all there in the Fetch TV offering, which gives me, you know, an X gigabytes storage on the unit. And so you're actually getting a much broader value proposition. You're obviously getting your internet, your phone, everything. And so you're going to see this marketing wall that's not just about the streaming, but is actually about the broader communication proposition.
Okay. What do we know about where everyone's lining up? So Stan, there, that's Fairfax and Nine. Obviously, there's content to come through Nine. What about Seven, though? Where are they in this? Are they there at all?
That's probably one of the most interesting things. You would have thought with the history of Kerry Stokes and Rupert Murdoch and all of that, that Kerry would be up for a fight. But presto, has actually seen Foxtel and Seven come together. So actually, when you're looking at the alignment, you've got Nine and Fairfax on one side, you've got the other telco players, all of that. That all makes sense. And then you've got Seven throwing in their lot with News Corp and Telstra and Foxtel, and probably 10 as well once all its machinations of ownership are worked out. So you've got a really interesting situation where the SVOD war is actually seeing a broader realignment of our media, and I think we'll actually see that alignment stay put over a number of issues, whether that's regulation or, you know, any sort of media debate that goes forward. We've got a very clear divide on the battlefield now.
One thing I've been wondering, though, Nick, is if I watch something on iView on the ABC, that doesn't affect my internet download. It doesn't count as part of my plan. If I start watching a whole lot of content, new House of Cards series, bunch of movies I haven't seen, that's going to hit me in the pocket, isn't it?
It is. Not necessarily in terms of your wallet, but in terms of your capacity to download. And once you reach your cap, a lot of these plans slow your speed right down. So if you're 10 days into your plan and suddenly you've used up your limit, you've either got to up it and pay more, or you're stuck at dial-up speeds, which is not attractive. So one of the interesting things around these bundles is going to be who's made the right deal. And, you know, if I sign up to Optus, let's say, is my Stan plan unmetered and will I be able to actually, you know, use as much as I want for as long as I want? If I'm with Telstra and I'm trying to access Netflix, I guarantee you they're not going to give it to you unmetered.
All right. So a lot of it, the devil is going to be in the detail, and we haven't seen most of the detail yet. Is this going to be, though, about the best content or who has the best marketing campaign or just what's the cheapest way to get what an individual's after?
It'll come down to all of that, I think. It'll come down to, you know, who can best communicate their product, and you're going to see saturation marketing campaigns. We're hearing, you know, up to $30 million just for Netflix in terms of their war chest. Obviously, Fairfax and Nine have said they'll spend up to $100 million in kind of contra-advertising, so yeah, their own properties. And, of course, Foxtel with News Corp and all of that, they can really market.
There'll be a bit of contra going on there too.
There'll be a lot going on in the next few months. More broadly, I think it will come down to, you know, providing the best offering. And what's interesting is how it's going to change the traditional way we've seen things. So yesterday, Stan announced it had a deal with Village. Normally, a lot of these big movie franchises, let's say the Lego Movie, Wolf of Wall Street, would have gone from the cinema to pay TV and eventually made it on to to free-to-air TV.
Yeah, now, a couple of years later.
Exactly, a couple of years later. But now you'll see Stan in the next few weeks and months putting all that content on streaming, so you're going to see it move a lot faster. And that's obviously going to present a challenge for Foxtel, and it's going to impact on the value offering that they're giving their subscribers who are still paying $100 a month. So I think you'll see some movement there too.
That was Nick Christensen, the deputy editor of Moombrella, speaking there to Richard 80. You are listening, of course, to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And speaking of streaming, I do want to mention this again, because we did talk about it last week. And some of you have asked me what kind of content is at the Patreon page. Why don't you just go take a look for yourself? It's patreon.com/PCJ Radio. That's PCJ RADIO. And there's all kinds of actually new content that we did upload this past week, including some freebies that I'm sure that many people will enjoy. Now, those who are regular listeners to PCJ Radio International may remember a series of special programs that we started last year called From the Radio Netherlands Archives. Now, these programs were only broadcast and not made available online, but they are now. The first one, Program 1 of From the Radio Netherlands Archives, is at Patreon, and if you become a patron, you can download the full program. Here's a little teaser of what's in that show.
Hier Radio Nederland in Hilversum.
Dutch World Broadcasting System, Radio Nederland, presents In Other Words, with Robert Hasluck and Ian Elliott.
I've been working so hard, Bob. I'm absolutely dog-tired.
Gisteravond bracht de televisie in de Nederlandse huiskamers een gesprek met president Sukarno. Het was opgenomen in Jakarta en naar hier overgevlogen.
Welcome at Radio Nederland.
In 1971, Radio Nederland offered the Golden Windmill Award for the best short story written in English by an African writer under 30 years of age. In fact, there were three prizes, a gold, a silver, and a bronze model of a Dutch windmill.
And now, here's Jonathan Marks with Radio Nederland's weekly communications magazine, DX Jukebox.
We present our annual newsreel, Window on Holland.
On top of this organ, once again, a lady, a very beautiful lady with long dark hair. And there are two statues, two puppets on this one.
I think it was Ted Lewis who once said, in fact he said it many times, is everybody happy? Of course they are. This is Bruce Parsons. Hello there.
Let's give them a kick. Let's join forces and do a program together. For instance, I don't know, have you got any idea?
About a program for the two of us? Mm-hmm. Sure, I have an idea.
Welcome to PCJ Radio International's presentation of From the Radio Netherlands Archives. I'm Paulette Macquarie. Over the next 2 hours, we will present a collection of rare recordings made by Radio Netherlands dating back to 1947. Also on the program, you will hear music selections recorded especially for Radio Netherlands, like the one being played now, The Skymasters with Pandora. So, like a Pandora's box, let's see what we have inside.
Thank you.
That's right. Part one of From the Radio Netherlands Archives that was broadcast at the end of last year is now available at Patreon. You just have to become a patron and you can actually listen to the show. Some of you have been asking when the next program is. Well, that was series one. That was program one of series one, which is four shows. And we're now working on the second series of another four shows, which we will tell you more about once we have a better idea of what we're actually going to have in it. But just stay tuned to PCJ and our website, pcjmedia.com, which is going to be getting a facelift in March. We'll have the information there. May. May 1st, the launch of the new PCJ website, and also through our Facebook page for PCJ Radio International. Anyway, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening over the last seven days, and what we can expect, well, until next week's show. Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through March 18th. Normal at low and middle latitude bands, normal to fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through March 18th, magnetic conditions quiet to unsettled, shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through March 19th, solar activity very low, geomagnetic activity, a slight chance of active intervals on March 17th and 18th. From FK Janda in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be active to disturbed on March 17th, 23rd, and 30th. Quiet to active on March 18th, 19th, 24th, 27th to 29th, 31st, April 1st to 3rd, and 5th. Mostly quiet on March 20th. Quiet on March 21st and 26th. Quiet to unsettled March 22nd, 25th, and April 4th. From Space Weather Canada, greatest DRX nanoteslas in the auroral zone verging on stormy March 29th. Lesser peaks in the polar and subauroral zones. From SWPC in Boulder, G2 moderate geomagnetic conditions likely March 28th and 29th, with ANK indices peaking at 30 and 6. Then G1 minor storming March 30th, 31st, and April 2nd. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2, only on March 20th, 21st, and 25th to 27th. Solar flux peaking at 76 from March 22nd to 25th. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting March 17th to 21st between Iran and India. March 20th and 21st off the coasts of Namibia and South Africa and off the northwest coast of Australia. And through March 21st, off the west coast of Mexico.
Thanks, Glenn. I kind of suspect that you might have a cold right there. I'm not too sure. You just sound very different. Anyway, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the program. It's been nice to have you with us. If you want to contact us for any reason, program suggestions, or just to say hello, and of course, let us know how you heard the show, either shortwave, FM, medium wave, or satellite. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team here in Taipei, Taiwan, I'm Keith Pennell wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. 73, and of course, 88 to the ladies.
This is Media Network Plus.